Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Yeah, it is just a phenomenal time to be looking at the intersection of population data and predictive biology. I'm really thrilled for our analysis today.
I am too. So I want you to imagine a scenario for a second. Think about your own body right now. Imagine having a known, documented, aggressive, cancer-causing mutation circulating in your bloodstream.
Right, not just a hypothetical genetic risk factor.
Exactly, not a slight predisposition. Mm-hmm. We are talking about a literal driver of disease actively replicating in your cells. The default medical assumption, I mean, the narrative we have all been taught is that this is a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, it's viewed as a one-way street to a devastating diagnosis.
Right, and the only question is when the clock runs out.
And that paradigm of, you know, inevitable disease progression has driven clinical anxiety for decades.
But what if, instead of that mutation taking over, your body is naturally suppressing it? What if, without any pharmaceutical intervention, without you ever feeling a single symptom, your biological systems are actively shrinking that mutant clone?
Winning a silent microscopic battle on your behalf.
Yes. It completely shatters the idea of genetic destiny. What really happens when a cancer-causing mutation enters the bloodstream? Is it always a ticking time bomb, or can our bodies naturally suppress it? Okay, let's unpack this.
Today we celebrate the work of the Danish General Suburban Population Study team and researchers at Roskilde University and North Carolina State University who have advanced our understanding of myeloproliferative neoplasms.
So, to figure out how our bodies can naturally suppress a blood cancer mutation, we're taking this deep dive into an incredibly rich data set.
Mm-hmm, a decade's worth of longitudinal tracking.
Yeah, our mission today is to decode the mathematics of survival. We want to prove that your biological destiny isn't written in stone just because a rogue cell appears.
And we are going to look at the exact computational models that map this hidden battlefield.
Right. So where do we start?
We need to start by setting the biological stage, I think. We're analyzing a group of blood cancers known as myeloproliferative neoplasms, or MPNs.
Okay, MPNs.
Yeah. And instead of walking through a textbook definition, let's look at the mechanics. These diseases originate in the bone marrow, specifically within the hematopoietic stem cells.
And those are the foundational cells responsible for generating your entire blood supply, right?
Yeah.
Like red cells, white cells, platelets.
Exactly. And the entire cascade of disease starts with a single, highly specific typo in the DNA.
The JAK2 mutation.
Yeah, specifically JAK2 V617F. Under normal circumstances, you know, a stem cell waits for an external chemical signal, like a growth factor, to bind to its receptor before it decides to divide.
Okay.
But the JAK2 mutation essentially short-circuits that receptor, locking it in the on position.
Oh, wow.
So the cell constantly receives the signal to divide and multiply, even when the body doesn't actually need new blood cells.
So the mutant cell basically becomes a rogue factory, overproducing blood cells, which leads to the severe clotting and cardiovascular issues associated with MPNs.
Precisely. And historically, the medical field mostly studied this JAK2 mutation in patients who were already sitting in a hematology clinic, right? Yeah. Suffering from the overt disease.
Which creates a massive observational blind spot.
A huge one. The selection bias in that historical approach is profound. By only analyzing the genetics of the sick, researchers naturally concluded that the mutation is an unstoppable conqueror.
Right. The assumption was that once the mutation occurs in a stem cell, it inevitably outcompetes all the healthy stem cells.
Yeah, expanding its territory until the patient requires aggressive treatment.
But massive population screenings have completely upended that assumption, creating this fascinating statistical mystery. We now have data showing that roughly 3.1% of the general healthy population harbors this exact JAK2 mutation in their blood.
Yeah, a state called clonal hematopoiesis of indeterminate potential, or CHP.
Right, CHP. They have the mutation, but no disease.
And 3.1% of the global population is, I mean, it's an astronomical figure. It translates to tens of millions of people walking around with a known cancer driver.
Yet the annual incidence of overt MPN disease, the people whose bodies actually succumb to the overproduction, is merely 1 in 100,000.
The drop-off from the presence of the mutation to the manifestation of the cancer is staggering.
It really is. Let's reframe how we visualize this. Finding out 3 out of every 100 people have this mutation is like discovering a notoriously aggressive weed seed planted in their garden.
That's a great way to put it.
But only 1 in 100,000 gardens is actually overgrown. The rest of the gardens somehow keep the invader in check. So what does this all mean? If the mutation is the driver, why isn't it driving everyone off the cliff?
What's fascinating here is that this massive epidemiological gap fundamentally proves that clonal expansion is far from guaranteed.
Right.
The mere existence of a mutant cell does not dictate a biological inevitability. The healthy cells in that ecosystem frequently hold their ground.
So to understand the dynamics of that competition, the researchers required a unique type of observation.
Exactly. They couldn't rely on snapshots of sick patients. They needed to watch the ecosystem over time.
And they found their perfect observational window in the Danish General Suburban Population Study, or GSUS. This was a broad screening of nearly 20,000 relatively healthy individuals from the general population. And from that enormous pool, they isolated an incredibly specific cohort of 67 people.
Yeah, and the selection criteria for these 67 individuals represent the backbone of this entire analysis. First, every single person had to have a starting variant allele fraction, or VAF, of greater than 1%.
Okay, so in practical terms, that means at least 1% of the DNA analyzed from their blood draw carried the GAK2 mutation.
Right, they possessed a substantial established mutant clone.
So they weren't just dealing with a single rogue cell. The invasive weed had already gained a solid foothold.
Exactly. But what makes this data set a true goldmine is the timeline. These 67 people were tracked with multiple blood measurements spanning over a full 10 years.
Wow, a 10-year uninterrupted view of how this mutation behaves in the wild.
Yeah, without the interference of targeted cancer therapies. Tracking the variant allele fraction over a decade provides the raw biological trajectory.
But raw data only tells you what happened, right? Not the underlying rules of the system.
Right, exactly. To extract those rules, the researchers applied a rigorous mathematical framework known as the Moran process.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The Moran process sounds like high-level stochastic mathematics, but the underlying mechanism is incredibly elegant.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's picture that bone marrow ecosystem again, but this time, imagine it operates with a strict one-in, one-out nightclub policy.
I love this analogy.
Yeah, it's like a highly regulated, exclusive nightclub. The nightclub is the stem cell niche in your marrow, and the patrons are your hematopoietic stem cells.
And the concept of a rigid carrying capacity is vital here. The human body does not allow stem cells to multiply infinitely.
Right.
For the purposes of their mathematical model, they define this absolute maximum capacity, the size of the nightclub, as roughly 100,000 stem cells. They assign this variable the letter N.
And these stem cells are not constantly dividing, right? They take their time. The model establishes a generation time, or TG, of about 200 days.
Mm-hmm. On average, a stem cell only replicates once every 200 days.
And because the bone marrow nightclub is always at maximum capacity, a fundamental rule applies. Every single time a cell divides to create a new one, another cell somewhere in that same niche must randomly die to make room.
One in, one out.
Exactly.
The zero-sum nature of this environment is the engine of the Moran process. The total population of N remains perfectly flat at 100,000.
Right.
However, the ratio of the patrons inside the ratio of JAK2 mutant cells to healthy wild-type cells can drift over time.
So if a healthy cell divides and a mutant cell randomly dies to make room, the clone shrinks.
Right, and if a mutant cell divides and a healthy cell dies, the clone grows.
But if that were the entire equation, the expansion or contraction of the cancer mutation would just be a coin toss, right?
Yeah.
Pure random genetic drift.
Yeah, exactly. But cancer isn't usually random. It has a competitive edge. And that brings us to the most critical variable in their entire mathematical architecture.
Right, the selective advantage.
Yes. They introduced a parameter called ES, the selective advantage. This tax value quantifies exactly how much the biological game is rigged. It measures the fitness edge the mutant cells have over the healthy ones.
So if ES is zero, it's a completely fair fight in the bone marrow. The mutant and the healthy cells have the exact same probability of dividing and surviving.
Right, and that state is referred to as neutral drift. Over a decade, the proportion might wander up or down just through statistical noise, but there is no systemic push driving the clone to take over.
But if the selective advantage is a positive number, say 0.2, the dynamics change entirely.
Oh, entirely. And as of 0.2 means the mutant clone replicates 20% faster or survives 20% longer than a wild type cell.
The one in, one out rule still applies, but the mutant cells are aggressively taking all the new spots.
Exactly. Now, to calculate that precise value for each of the 67 people, they couldn't just guess or plug numbers into a simple spreadsheet. Tracking complex, noisy biological data over a decade requires serious computational firepower.
So how did they do it?
They had to use a sophisticated simulation approach called approximate Bayesian computation.
Okay, ABC.
Yeah, ABC based on sequential Monte Carlo. Instead of trying to solve an impossible algebraic equation, it harnesses brute computational force.
Oh, wow.
The researchers essentially programmed a supercomputer to simulate thousands of parallel universes of a patient's bone marrow.
That is wild. They generate massive amounts of synthetic data. Like, they test an AND's value of 0.1, run the 10-year simulation, and check if the synthetic curve matches the actual blood test results of the patient.
Right. And if it doesn't fit, they throw it out, adjust these values slightly, and simulate the 10 years all over again.
So they systematically narrow down the possibilities until they isolate the exact selective advantage, the specific Sphia's value, that perfectly replicates the real-world biological history of that specific individual.
Exactly. They custom-fitted the stochastic mathematics to the biology of all 67 individuals, and the results they extracted completely shatter the classical assumption that a cancer mutation is an unstoppable force.
Okay, let's get into the results breakdown.
Well, the sheer accuracy of the model is worth noting first. For 66 of the 67 subjects, the Moran process flawlessly mapped to the decade of biological data. The model works.
That's incredible.
But the distribution of those A's values is the true revelation.
Right, and if you were listening to this and wondering why this dense mathematical modeling matters to your own health, it's because of how these results break down. First, out of the cohort, 70%, that's 47 people, showed the expected positive self-renewal advantage.
Right, their SES values were greater than zero.
So the game in their bone marrow was heavily rigged, and the mutant clone was growing over the decade.
And that 70% represents the classical expectation. The mutation enters, it has an advantage, it grows. But the remaining 30% deviate entirely from the textbook.
Yeah, 12% of the group, 8 individuals, exhibited the neutral drift we discussed earlier.
Right.
Their Bayes value was effectively zero.
Right, no advantage.
The clone just hovered at a low level for 10 years without taking over.
And then the data reveals the final group, which challenges everything we thought we knew.
The shocker. 18% of these individuals, 12 people, had a statistically significant negative advantage. Their Bayes value was below zero.
Wait, a negative advantage? The implications of an A's value below zero are profound. It means the mutant clone wasn't just stalling, it was actively losing the competition.
It was systematically shrinking over the decade. The weed was actually dying off entirely on its own.
Exactly. The healthy cells were outcompeting the known cancer-causing mutation, clearing the threat without the patient ever receiving a single dose of chemotherapy.
That is amazing.
It provides mathematical proof that harboring a cancer driver mutation does not equal an inevitable march toward clinical disease.
Right.
In nearly a fifth of these subjects, the body's internal systems were spontaneously reversing the clonal expansion.
That immediately forces us to look at the disease prediction data.
Wow.
We know the math, we know who had growing clones and shrinking clones, but who actually got sick.
Right, over this 10-year tracking period, who crossed the threshold to being diagnosed with overt MPN?
Yeah.
Well, the clinical endpoints introduce a layer of deep biological complexity. Out of the 67 subjects, 37 eventually developed clinical MPN disease.
Okay, and the remaining 30 did not progress. They stayed classified as having CHIP.
Right. Now, when we compare the growth advantage between the people who got cancer and the people who didn't, the correlation on a macro level aligns with logic.
So the people who got sick had a higher advantage.
Exactly. The cohort that progressed to MPN exhibited a significantly higher average selective advantage. A fast-growing clone is, generally speaking, a strong predictor of eventual disease.
But wait, looking closely at the data, there's a plot twist. That correlation is far from perfect.
Oh, definitely.
Some individuals who had a negative advantage, meaning their clones were actively shrinking in the stem cell nightclub, still ended up progressing to overt MPN disease.
Yeah, it's a paradox. A shrinking clone leading to clinical cancer highlights a disconnect between the stem cell compartment and the peripheral blood where the disease actually manifests.
And conversely, some individuals with rapidly expanding clones possessing highly positive ZAL's values sailed through the entire decade without ever developing the disease.
Exactly. The growth rate of the mutation cannot be the sole trigger.
Okay, wait, I just spotted a massive logical paradox in the data regarding the group with the shrinking clones.
Oh, let's hear it.
To even be included in this study, an individual had to have a variant allele fraction of at least 1%. That equates to thousands upon thousands of mutant stem cells. If 18% of people possess a negative advantage where the mutation is actively outcompeted and dies off, how did that clone ever grow large enough to cross the 1% threshold in the first place? If it is naturally disadvantaged, it should have been eradicated when it was just one or two rogue cells.
That is a brilliant observation. I love this critical thinking. Unpacking that mathematical impossibility leads to one of the most critical insights of the entire paper.
Really?
Yes. The researchers acknowledge that a clone cannot reach a 1% VAF if it is inherently disadvantaged from inception. The only viable biological explanation is that the selective advantage is not static.
Oh, so it changes.
Exactly. Early in the patient's life, the mutation must have possessed a highly positive value. It had a massive competitive edge, allowing it to multiply and reach that 1% mark.
So it was winning the war, expanding its territory, but then something fundamental changed and it began losing. What causes the environment to suddenly turn hostile to a mutation that was previously thriving?
The shift from a positive to a negative advantage strongly points to the activation of an adaptive immune response.
Oh, wow. The immune system.
Yeah. The immune system is constantly surveilling the body. It is highly probable that for years, the JAK2 mutant cells evaded detection. But eventually, the immune system recognized the mutated proteins as foreign.
So once recognized, the body mounted a targeted defense, fundamentally altering the rules of the bone marrow ecosystem and driving the mutant clone into a decline.
Precisely. The body learns to identify the invader and actively calls it. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it forces a massive paradigm shift for medicine.
Right, because if the clone growth rate doesn't perfectly predict cancer, we have to look outside the DNA.
Exactly. Something else must be acting as the catalyst for the actual disease progression. Other health factors must be the true triggers.
Did they figure out what those factors might be?
Well, they cross-referenced their mathematical modeling with a wealth of secondary clinical data they had collected on these patients. They specifically looked at C-reactive protein, or CRP, which is a standard marker for systemic inflammation.
And what did the data on inflammation show?
It's incredibly telling. The individuals who ultimately progressed to clinical MPN showed significantly different profiles in their inflammatory markers compared to those whose condition remained benign.
Wow. Let's dig into the why of that. Why does systemic inflammation matter to a microscopic stem cell mutation?
Chronic inflammation acts like a systemic stressor. It floods the bone marrow with toxic signaling molecules. Normal, healthy stem cells struggle to survive in that inflamed, toxic environment.
But the JAK2 mutant cells might possess an inherent stress resistance, right? They thrive in the very environment that suppresses the healthy cells.
Exactly. Chronic inflammation essentially poisons the healthy competitors, handing the mutant clone a massive selective advantage.
So chronic inflammation, whether driven by infections or lifestyle factors, could be the exact environmental fertilizer that turns a slow-growing mutant clone into an aggressive clinical cancer.
The microenvironment dictates the behavior of the cell. And that theory is perfectly supported by another fascinating factor the study highlighted, non-cancer medications.
Oh, right. The study pointed out the potential impact of statins.
Yes. Statins are globally prescribed to manage cholesterol levels. But a well-documented secondary effect of statins is their potent systemic anti-inflammatory property.
So millions of people take a pill for their heart, and inadvertently, they are lowering the systemic inflammation in their bone marrow.
Right. By cooling off that inflammation, the statins might be stripping the JAK2 mutant cells of their environmental advantage, leveling the playing field, and allowing the healthy stem cells to successfully compete again.
It's a stunning example of how interconnected our physiological systems truly are.
It completely redefines preventive care. However, as robust as this tracking is, we do have to note the limitations of the mathematical model itself.
Right, the Moran process is an abstraction. It models the stem cell niche as a perfectly closed loop of identical cells simply dividing or dying.
But hematopoiesis, the creation of blood, is not a single step. It's a massive, multi-stage cascade of differentiation.
From a stem cell down to a mature red or white blood cell.
Exactly. The current computational model does not fully map the dynamics occurring at all those intermediate stages.
So measuring the variant allele fraction solely in the peripheral blood introduces a layer of mathematical uncertainty.
Yeah, a shrinking clone in the stem cell compartment might still be overproducing mature cells due to downstream amplification, which explains the paradox of the patients with negative values who still developed the clinical disease.
Right, so to achieve a flawless predictive model, Future longitudinal studies will need simultaneous cell counts at every intermediate stage.
Precisely. But despite that limitation, the insights here are paradigm shifting.
So if we have to distill this exhaustive analytical journey down to its core, what is the ultimate take-home message?
The central insight is this. The presence of the JAK2V6180 of cancer driver mutation does not guarantee a one-way street to blood cancer, and in many individuals, the body naturally suppresses these mutant clones over time.
Yeah.
This mathematically proves that we must shift our focus from merely detecting mutations to understanding the specific biological environments, like inflammation, that allow them to thrive.
It proves that your biology is highly adaptable and fiercely resilient. What does this mean for the future of personalized cancer screening and prevention?
That is exactly the question that will dictate the next decade of genomic medicine.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Quiet bloodline under neon light. A tiny spark can lean to wrong or right. Same red numbers on a paper screen, but different forces in the in-between.
One step forward,
one step back in time.
Chance and pressure
in a hidden rhyme. We watch the fraction rise or stall or fade and wonder what the stem cells chose and made.
It's not just the slope, not just the climb.
Not every signal means the end in time. A thousand silent turns beneath the skin, where drift can lose or selection can win. So hold that line, read deeper than the chart. The smallest part. Some carry storms that never break the day. Some feel the current pulling hard one way. A crowded pool where every copy fights. A coin flip, kingdom counting days and nights. If